everyone, welcome to a special bonus episode of the Engadget Podcast. And in this episode, I'll just be chatting with Max Avery, the author of A Masterpiece in Disarray, David Lynch's Dune, and Oral History. As you can guess, this is a deep dive into David Lynch's adaptation of Frank Herbert's Dune, a movie that wasn't really well-loved when it was released, either by critics or fans, but I think has achieved some sort of a cult following. It's an interesting project to dive into now, as we're still awaiting Denis Villeneuve's second Dune film, and, you know, we're in a really interesting space when it comes to science fiction movies. I feel like Marvel films and a lot of the things we get are really sanitized versions of science fiction, and David Lynch's Dune certainly is not that. Max Avery is a longtime film journalist from ComingSoon.net. He has bylines on Wired, The Dissolve, and Vulture. And for full disclosure, he's also a longtime friend of mine. But I do think Engadget readers and listeners will be really interested in hearing more about David Lynch's Dune. Let's get on to our chat. Max Avery, thank you so much for joining us in the Engadget podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Max, I've known you for a very long time, and I know sometimes you take on questionable tasks, you know. I remember at one point you watched all of
Dark Shadows?
Dark Shadows. Hundreds of episodes of Dark Shadows.
Yes. Yeah.
I remember that project.
Yes, I couldn't get anybody to pay me for that.
So you did that without getting paid. Why spend 2 years of your life researching and writing about David Lynch's Dune?
Oh, you know, I love an underdog. Mm-hmm. I like the little kid on the playground who's nobody's paying attention to, or you can kind of make fun of, you know, like, I like that kid. And Dune is kind of that kid in terms of
the one, you know, who's been beaten down by history, you know, for decades now. So, okay.
Yeah, because like even like, you know, if you go back to the 80s, like obviously, you have the Star Wars and all that stuff. But like, you know, even movies like Last Starfighter and Crawl have like their fan bases. Mm-hmm. But I mean, like Dune, you know, never really got the its due in terms of like a serious, like modern examination, you know, even among Lynch fans. Mm-hmm. You know, like
even among Lynch himself, right?
So who's that guy who wrote Infinite Jest?
David Foster Wallace.
David Foster Wallace in 1996 did this article for Premiere Magazine where he went to the set of Lost Highway and he interviewed mm-hmm. David Lynch. He did this big, big profile on Lynch. And Dune was like two paragraphs of that. Uh-huh. And like, it was basically very dismissive. It was very, very kind of, you know, snide. It's just like, you know, yeah, Dune was just like the stepping stone that he needed to make real movies like Blue Velvet. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, no, it deserves more than that. You know, like it's first of all, Lynch spent, you know, 3 years of his life on it. And it's also his biggest budget movie. It's mm-hmm. his highest grossing movie still to this day. And I think, you know, in terms of a lot of Lynch fans tend to dismiss it because Lynch himself dismisses it, mm-hmm. you know. But as Jordan Hoffman says in my book, I interviewed Jordan for the book, you know, he says, you know, like Franz Kafka wanted all of his work burned when he died, you know. So it's like what the author thinks of their own work mm-hmm. doesn't mean shit after, you know, after it's out in the world. Then it's ours mm-hmm. to do with as we please. Yes. And I think there's a lot of, you know, the thing I discovered as I kept watching the movie and kept, you know, researching the movie is there's so much of Lynch himself, of his personality, of his, you know, his belief system, his, you know, just his whole psyche is infused into this movie, you know, in a really indelible way.
Do you think like he has sort of disavowed the movie because it wasn't the full vision of what he wanted? Because it did seem like he went in with an artistic, you know, actual design for this movie and what he was trying to say with it.
Yes. So mm-hmm. I think, you know, we obviously get into a much more detailed.
And you talked with Lynch, which is, I think, a pretty big coup for him to open up to an interview about this movie. So good job.
Yeah, that man did not have to talk to me.
Yep.
But, you know, the book definitely, it went from being, a stupid little book to a stupid big book after he talked to me. So, like, yeah, I definitely got access to a lot more people, you know, because he kind of legitimized it. And
that's great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he's wonderful, and you know, and he did kind of, you know, you know, approve of a lot of the ideas that I had about what he was going for. He was like, oh yeah, you're right. Yes, yes. And then mm-hmm. like, so that was very fulfilling. And so, but yeah, like, I think that, you know, he wanted to do something, and I think he got about 2/3 of it to the screen, mm-hmm. which is, you know, it's pretty sad because like what is there is fascinating. And, you know, especially if you look at it now, you know, like the movies that you and I have to watch, you know, the big blockbusters that are coming out, you know, they're just like, they've had all the edges, you know, mowed off with a belt sander. Like, it's like, there's nothing strange, you know, nothing weird, nothing startling, mm-hmm. nothing interesting, you know, they're all just, they hit the beats and then that's it. You know, Lynch's movie is full of just this immaculate strangeness. You know, you get people with, you know, these heart plugs that get pulled out of their bodies. You've got like a cat rat milking box. Mm-hmm. You've got, you know, these weirding modules that the, you know, blow people up with a word. It's like it, all these things that Lynch brought to the table are, you know, they're really fascinating. And pugs too. Like, there's lots of pugs. Lots of pugs in the movie.
So many pugs. That sense of weirdness, I think that is also what struck me, like, the more and more I've been reading your book, Max, that we have lived through so many Marvel movies, so many people trying to replicate what Marvel does, and just feels like, yeah, things have gotten watered down to a degree. Like, sometimes I feel like I'm watching the whatchamacallit, like a mythical version of like what a movie should be. What's the term when medicine's watered down? It's like okay, I don't know. I'll think back to that. But it feels like the movies we're seeing now are kind of watered down by in terms of their overall creative visions, in terms of like what they're trying to do with an audience. It is strange when things kind of stand out, right? Like, I think,
another medical analogy, it's like a placebo for a movie.
Like a placebo for a movie. Yes. Something like that. I think like it's strange when something kind of pops out, right? Like I was surprised that Sam Raimi ended up making Doctor Strange 2. And there's mm-hmm. a lot of cool Sam Raimi-ness in that, even though that movie is also like being weighed down by the pressures of the Marvel Cinematic Universe and everything. What mm-hmm. are the sorts of things, like, you brought up some things in this movie, like, what are the sorts of things that really strike you as being unique that we don't really see that much these days from Lynch's Dune?
Oh, well, certainly, you know, like, I really love the idea of the voiceover narration, that mm-hmm. like every character in the movie gets a voiceover, you know, like they, yes. you hear the inner monologues of everybody. I was talking to a guy who runs a comic shop here in Brooklyn, Anyone Comics. And
I love them. Yeah. Are they the ones in Crown Heights?
Yes.
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 I remember them. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was just talking to him about Dune, and he's like, oh, Dune, that's like the most comic book movie ever, because it's like the thought bubbles, mm-hmm. you know? And so like, yeah. And I've heard lots of people being like, oh, like if that movie had been a hit, you'd have seen that like in tons of movies, because it is a cool idea, and it, you know, it takes a lot, you know. So yeah, the Dune takes a lot of big bold swings like that, mm-hmm. you know, like, and unfortunately, like, you know, they in the process of editing the film, you know, the producers, you know, started insisting that Lynch include, you know, more exposition and in those inner monologues, you know, stuff that, like, you know, as Lynch says, you can start to smell a rat. You know, mm-hmm. and so, yeah, so that's kind of how the movie got, that's one of the many ways the movie got bastardized in post-production. You know, I think like some of it is due to Lynch's just inexperience, and he didn't have as much clout.
I mean, he went straight from small indie projects, right, straight into this massive studio thing, which tends to happen today to young directors, you know, so.
Yeah, Elephant Man, it's weird because like Elephant mm-hmm. Man was this, you know, sort of Oscar caliber, you know, mm-hmm. star-studded biopic, very classy, you know, and then he also did Eraserhead, which is this totally gonzo, you know, midnight movie cult thing, you know, oddity. So like, and both those movies were successful in their own realm mm-hmm. and for their own budget. So it's like, you know, at that point, I think the studios could like read anything they want into the tea leaves, you know? So it's like, oh yeah, he could do Star Wars. He could do Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Like he could do anything. And it's like, in hindsight, of course, you're like, no, David cannot do all
he just wants to be a little freak. Like, let him be a little freak. Like, that's basically it.
Yeah. No, but but I think Dune was actually, you know, I think he was right to take it on, because I think he is a good choice for it. It's just like, he, you know, they gave him a lot of creative leeway at the beginning. And then I think about halfway through the movie, I think they realized that it was getting a little unwieldy. You know, they were never going to be able to make like a commercial film out of what he was doing. And it's like, right. Yeah. So like, you know, they tried to kind of, you know, mold it into something else. And, you know, yeah. And that's why it feels a little, you know, bastardized, a little bit, you know, not what it's not all it could be.
Yeah, it's not I mean, I've rewatched it recently too, and I remember seeing, you know, Lynch's Dune as a kid. The visuals of it, the scope of it, always kind of amazed me. Like, the sheer amount of imagination in that movie amazed me. Watching it now, you're like, okay, this is kind of messy, but it's also an interesting mess. And maybe we need to learn to appreciate interesting messes more, because I'd rather have an interesting mess than a completely bland cookie cutter thing like Ant-Man 3 or something. Which, oh my god, I railed against that on Engadget. You guys can go read my review about that thing and just how empty that felt. And if anything, Lynch's Dune is not empty. It may be overstuffed like that. That's perhaps the opposite problem, but I think that's more interesting, at least, right?
Yeah, no, I think Lynch, on a talk show a few years after it came out, he said it's like a really nice Porsche that's been sort of crushed and compacted. Like, you could still drive it, but it's not like, you know, it's still a Porsche, but it's not as good as it was. But that was the fun part of doing the book, which is, you know, I mean, first of all, I would say right off the bat, like, the book is 560 pages,
it's big,
but it's not, you shouldn't be intimidated by that, because I wrote it so that you could skip around and, you know, kind of skim over, you know, section. It's divided up into a lot of different sections.
I feel like that is your, you know, entertainment journalist, blogger mentality too. Like, you're ready, like, you just want to skip ahead, like, follow this index, go all around, or you can, I like your guidelines, Max, for how you actually go through the book. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And also, like, I cut over 100 pages out of it. Like, we really whittled it down to the bone, because I did not want it to be boring and I did not want it to be academic.
Well,
like,
you need your director's cut in a couple years, you know,
my Alan Smithy cut. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, like but the really cool thing about writing the book was, you know, it wasn't an authorized book, but I still had access to all these people. You know, I talked to Kyle, I talked to Sean Young, I talked to Rafaela De Laurentiis. So, you know, I talked to Bob Ringwood, who was amazing. Bob Ringwood, who did the costumes, you know, like, who's never talked about this movie, like, really, and he's like, he does not hold back. that was the great thing. It's like, I didn't want to do like something gossipy, or, you know, like, lurid, but you know, I wanted to just write about the movie, but I wanted to be honest about it. You know, I didn't want it to be a kiss-assy, you know, oh, everybody had a great time, we had a lot of fun, it was so amazing. You know, like, I hate those things.
Whenever you do like roundtables or press days for recent movies, nobody says the truth, right? Because it's too fresh, it's too real. They're all still going to see these people. You really need that hindsight of time to really let the truth simmer for a while for a lot of folks, right?
Yeah, I picked the sweet spot. It's been long enough that a lot of people don't care anymore, but not so long that they're all dead.
Yeah, it's a good timeline.
Yeah.
Good time. Good job.
No, but some of the people really, like some of the people I talked to were like 90 years old. And so, like, it was really like now or never. Like, this was like, I did, as it went on, it became more and more important to me to try to get as many people as I could, because, you know, like I had one guy who died while I was emailing him to talk to him. You were trying to arrange
finish
dates.
Your book, Max. Like, yeah. The clock is ticking. Oh my god.
No, it's serious business, you know. And I think as a historical document, I think it has a lot of value. And that was also something that was really important to me, because, like you just said, like, you know, as a seasoned movie journalist, you know, I'm used to, you know, doing stuff that's very hollow and very, like, you know, just, you know, it's basically PR.
Yeah. This person was cast in this. Keep going. 20 posts a day. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's just blasting out content with a cannon. And I like the idea of doing the opposite of that, of like honing in on one movie and really just examining it, you know, like, down to the molecules. and, you know, really, you know, trying to see if there's something, mm-hmm. you know, more there. And in the case of Dune, there was a lot more there, you know, I think people are, when they read the book, are going to be surprised by how much of David is in there and how much, mm-hmm. you know, how many, you know, great little, you know, details and, you know, how much thought went into everything, you know, the look, the feel, the script, everything, you know, like this was not, you know, some people are like, oh, David just did that for the money. No, like he really put his all mm-hmm. into this thing. And so did everybody else.
Like Dune, even though like I think narratively kind of messy, it doesn't look half-assed. It looks like everybody gave their whole ass to that movie, at least. Like they, you know, there's a lot of work, a lot of thought put into that whole project. You talked to a ton of people, Max. Was there anything you learned that you never knew before in doing this book? And you don't have to spoil the whole thing, but any tidbits mm-hmm. you want to share, like cool info you learned?
Well, to me, one of the most fascinating things was about 100 days into production, Kyle MacLachlan walked off the movie.
Oh, okay.
And
that's a pretty long shoot for 100 days. Okay. Was he just like sick of it?
It was no. It was not about exhaustion at all. Mm-hmm. Like, no, that's the thing. Like, everybody working on the movie was mm-hmm. enjoying the process of doing the movie. But in behind the scenes, there was a lot of turmoil, like in terms of the financials and all that. And the De Laurentiis organization, you know, they worked a little differently than a normal Hollywood organization. I would say, you know, so like 100 days into filming, Kyle did not have a signed contract.
Ooh.
And they kept adding more movies onto mm-hmm, it mm-hmm. and all this stuff. And it was like, the idea was like, if he waited until the movie was done, he had no leverage.
Right.
Basically. Right. And so like, you know, his agents and lawyers or whatever were just like, you know, this is scorched earth, but you're gonna walk off the movie, and then and sure enough, the contracts were magically signed like a day or two later, and to me that's a fascinating thing, because you know, if people don't know, like this was Kyle's first movie,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you know, he's the lead of the biggest science fiction movie ever made at the time. And, you know, it was the most expensive movie Universal Pictures had ever made. And, you know, to have all that on his shoulders and then and have never been in this situation before yeah. at all. I've basically never been before a camera. And like then to have the balls to just walk off in the middle of it, you know, that took guts. And that
love
took,
him.
Yeah, you mm-hmm. gotta love that guy. And he was great, by the way. He gave me a lot of time and gave me a lot of great stories like that. And I love that man.
That's cool. Also, I love Kyle MacLachlan's like late career now too, like where he is. He was in The Good Fight. He was also in a movie nobody saw, but Confess Fletch, the John Hamm Fletch movie. I love that movie, and he is so good in it.
Yeah. Okay, I gotta tell you, I was hired by Kino Lorber.
Oh,
to okay. do the audio commentaries on the two Chevy Chase Fletch movies.
Mm-hmm.
So like I read all the Fletch books. I got
your rabbit hole. Okay.
Yeah. I went down my rabbit hole again. And then like, I love Confess Fletch. Mm-hmm. Confess Fletch is very, very true to the book, much truer to the books than the Chevy Chase movies. And I think it's a magnificent movie for adults.
It is. It's so quietly hilarious, I think. Mm-hmm. And MacLachlan is great in that. Listen, Max, like we can talk about movies all day long, and we will have you back on the Filmcast at some point to talk about more movies. I do have to say, like, we are certainly in a golden period of reassessing the 80s, right? And mm-hmm. it's because everyone's trying to redo the 80s. We're trying to... The people who grew up in the 80s, like you and me, are now in the position to kind of make art or make things or go back and analyze those things. I've also been watching RoboDoc, the story of RoboCop, mm-hmm. and that's also fantastic. What's the value, you think, in like doing these deep dives into things that were at least well known? I think RoboCop is far more popular than Lynch's Dune, but what was the value to you for doing this work?
Well, if we don't know our history, we're doomed to repeat it, I guess. I mean,
that seems like a good thing for Hollywood. Like, they just want to, let's do it again and again.
Again yep. and again. Yeah, and I mean, and it's funny, too, because, like, in my lifetime, there have been three Dunes. There's been the Lynch one, there's been the sci-fi miniseries, and now there's the Villeneuve one. And so, and I think it's going to be one of these things like The Wizard of Oz. Like, they're just going to keep trying to do it again and again and again. And, you know, that's because the story is never going to not be relevant. Mm-hmm. You know, like, the idea of colonization and, you know, and all that, you know, I think that is a historically a very pertinent issue. And, you know, and I think Herbert really gets to, you know, it gets to the deep, deep, you know, heart of it. And,
Dune is set in the desert for a reason, right? Like, Herbert had a lot of like big ideas when it came to how we were treating the Middle East and how.
It's not a coincidence that Arrakis sounds a lot like Iraq.
Absolutely.
But that whole cycle of, you know, oppression and then the aggression of the oppressed, and I think it's always going to be an important story, and also the idea of you know, charismatic leaders and you know, taking us down, you know, paths that maybe we shouldn't go and that maybe we shouldn't trust them. And maybe
people may not realize this, but the Paul Atreides story, it gets kind of dark eventually. Like, it's not all gleaming hero stuff for him. I'm interested. So what did you think of Villeneuve's Dune compared to Lynch's? Because I love that too, but it's different. It's a very different artistic vision.
It is different. I mean, it's sort of similar to, like, right after I saw Avengers Infinity War, everybody's like, oh, what'd you think? I'm like, I don't know. I saw half a movie. Ask me in a year.
I did not like Infinity War, so yes, I hear you.
But ask me in a year when I've seen the whole thing. Mm-hmm. But, like, I mean, I do know that, you know, Villeneuve is certainly truer to Herbert's intentions with Paul. In terms of Paul's story, of Paul not being an actual messiah who could make it rain magically at the end of the film, you know, as in Lynch's version. I don't know if you saw this, Devendra, but I did like a whole video. It's about 4 minutes long. It's a cut of using abandoned effect storyboards that I couldn't include in the book. I'm like, oh God, people got to see these are amazing. And Lynch had a whole other ending that he had planned that was not Paul making it rain on Arrakis.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
But it was sort of,
we'll link to that.
It was Paul, it was literally going into Paul's mind as he has this transcendent like experience of going to like this higher level of consciousness. And like there's all these like tiny, you know, third stage guild navigators attacking him, and like, and then they turn, and then he vomits angels. It's just crazy. And you can see the video of it on YouTube. I think you just look up like David Lynch Dune alternate ending. But discovering things like that, you know, I think, you know, as you asked before, like why do this? Because, you know, something like Dune, for whatever reason, has not been given its due. Like, there people have not taken it seriously. They're just like, oh, you know, that's the Lynch movie that Lynch doesn't like or whatever. And it's like, there's a lot to it. And there's a lot, you know, that was shot that didn't get into it. You know, like, there's, you know, the original cut was 4 hours, you know? So it's like, there's so much material out there that people just have never seen.
Is there any chance any of that would ever be restored, or are they just like wiping their hands of that movie?
Well, I talked to Rafaela De Laurentiis about that, and, you know, she didn't know the status of the footage. I mean, I honestly think it's like a coin flip whether it exists or not, because in 2008 there was a huge fire at Universal that destroyed a lot of stuff. I know that it existed prior to that because a lot of it was on the DVD, but that was not in very good quality, unfortunately. Yep. Unfortunately, the golden age of special features was during the DVD era. It's a coin flip also because it was a De Laurentiis production. It was it was technically an independent production. It wasn't, you know, Universal was just financing it partly. So I think that it could seemingly exist out there. You know, I've heard rumors maybe Criterion might be working on restoring it in some way.
That would be kind of a dream. I mean, listen, Max, like, we are now in a world where we're using AI and lasers to scan, like, you know, burn scrolls from ancient Greece to determine what's in them. So I think we can make this happen. We can get this footage, or at least make it look watchable or something. Yeah.
Well, we could be like Indiana Jones in that last Indiana Jones movie. Just burn everything and see if it melts and turns into something else.
We could totally do that. Okay. This project, Max, has taken over a big chunk of your life. Yes. It's like your third child now, right? So do you have anything in mind that you're going to tackle next in terms of like a deep dive like this, an unloved pop culture gem?
Well, it's difficult because I would never want to do anything like this again.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, basically I spent a year, of the 2 years I spent working on this, a year of it was not knowing if I was going to get David or Kyle or Rafaela. And so it's like, I basically didn't know if I even had a book for a year. So it's like, if I was going to do something like this again, I would need to know that I had at the very least the director.
I think this book proves that you can do it. You could do the work at the very least. This is your more successful version of David Lynch's Dune.
Like,
you can do a big project.
But to answer your question, I think, one movie I would love to dive into would be like The Keep. Michael Mann's The Keep.
Another movie, abandoned by its creator. Okay.
Even, and I think that was even a worse situation because like the effects guy died and they couldn't finish the effects and like the Paramount cut like an hour out of it. It was a very similar type of story. Like the difference is like, I don't even think Mann has been deliberately like suppressing it. Like he's like, I don't want it on Blu-ray. I don't want it out there. Like, I think maybe he someday might want to go in and tinker with it, which would be amazing. But like, I think, it is a really interesting movie from a major director that is just kind of, for all intents and purposes, lost.
Yeah.
That would be an interesting one. But again, I wouldn't do it without Michael Mann. I did just do a commentary on the Arrow Blu-ray of Black Hat, which is coming in November. Nice. Yeah, so that's the closest.
That's very cool.
It's the closest I've gotten so far.
I remember being very disappointed by that movie, but I love Michael Mann. Like the trailer alone for Ferrari is just like getting me so excited because it's such a beautifully cut trailer and a great teaser for that whole thing. So, okay, Max, I'm hoping that happens for you. That sounds like a really fun project too. One last thing I want to ask you, because I think what's unique about Lynch's Dune is that, as we've discussed, it is such a unique movie. It's so filled with life. It's not sanded down like so many things. What are the movies today? Like, it seems rare that we see movies that aren't so beaten down. Like, are there any you chat out? Like, we had mentioned Fury Road in our pre-chat, but I feel like that is one of just an artist taking a wild creative leap and a big vision there. Anything else you want to shout out that you think people should look at that's maybe been undersung lately?
Oh, that's an interesting question. Of like a more recent film?
Yeah. Because I know you, Max, like you are very much into the old stuff. And I always have to like kick you dragging, screaming into watching new things. Yes.
Yeah. I think the first thing that popped into my mind is probably The Nice Guys. I thought that did not get.
That movie's great.
The movie is just wonderful from top to bottom. And like Kiss Kiss Bang Bang before it did not get its due at the box office, and sadly we will not be seeing any sequels with Gosling that's an example of like Shane Black had the success with Iron Man 3, and so he got to do one for him, and I think that those tend to be the more interesting movies, the one for me movies, where they got the blank check and they can just kind of go in and do something that's purely them. Unfortunately, you're not seeing that much anymore. Guys like Ryan Coogler had such a great success with Black Panther, and then what's his next movie? Black Panther 2. Okay,
yeah.
you have taken a shot like in between those? Like. Ugh.
Once you're in the like studio machine, or once you're in the franchise machine, it seems like it's really hard to get off of it. It seems like the big problem, because it does take so much energy if you're actually if you're a creative visionary, you got to spend all your time on this thing, right?
Well, and you've got your, you know, you got your agents and managers or whatever, you know, are like, oh, I could go do this little thing that I've always wanted to do, or I could get a big paycheck and pay all you guys a percentage of that. Oh, I think you should do the second one. Yeah.
I think in terms of like big, you know, not to rag on all superhero movies, I've enjoyed quite a lot of them, but I think the movie I keep coming back to is like maybe James Wan's Aquaman. Which I think was a batshit insane movie. And I think it generally, like, critically, you know, loved because it was kind of doing something weird and different. But it also does it in a more crowd-pleasing way than Lynch's Dune. Like, there's a lot of stuff going on there. And whenever James Wan, you know, touches something, what was the other one? The horror movie that he did recently.
Malevolent.
Malevolent, which is another, that movie's insane. I cannot believe that movie.
Yeah, James Wan loves to swing for the fences. Mm-hmm. I do want to say that, like, you know, for people who are, you know, interested in reading my book, A Masterpiece in Disarray, David Lynch's Dune in Oral History.
We should have said that up front. I will, you know what, up front, we'll also, in the pre-recording before we start this interview, I will plug in Max.
Thank you. In the book, towards the end, you know, we talk about sort of the legacy of Dune, which is something that hadn't really been explored much, certainly not in book form. And, you know, Bob Ringwood, the costume designer, when he made those still suits, that was a very new kind of thing of, like, you know, manufacturing these things out of black rubber that, like, looked like sculpted muscle. And it's like, and then what did Bob Ringwood go on to do? The Batman costume from Tim Burton's Batman. And then what else did he go to do 10 years later? Uncredited, the X-Men costumes. So if you think about it, there is a direct...
Well, we won't talk so much about those, like the X-1 costumes.
It's just like, if you're talking about, like, sort of the seminal movies in the superhero genre, you know, like, there's a direct lineage from the Dune still suit in 1984 and Batman and then X-Men and then everything that came after.
Yep.
So, yeah, I think, you know, there's a lot more that people don't give credit to this movie for, you know, having a downstream influence. You know, like, I think even James Cameron, who I got to talk to, you know, like, he told me, like, when he talked to Denis Villeneuve, he's like, well, you know, Denis, you got your work cut out for you visually, because it's like it would be hard to top what David Lynch did. And it was, I think, and in some cases he didn't.
Like, it's a totally different way of approaching that world. But I think Villeneuve is more grounded, you know, whereas Lynch is like more wild, like 80s sci-fi, definitely coming off of Star Wars and everything.
Yeah, it's just it's a maximalist versus a minimalist approach. Yeah. Like with Villeneuve, everything is kind of flat, brutalist, you know, spare, big, wide Ansel Adams compositions, and you know, and like that's a cool aesthetic in and of itself. But yeah, I definitely prefer the maximalism and the you know, the wildness of David Lynch, and also David Lynch, you know, he and his crew, you know, Tony Masters, who designed 2001 Space Odyssey, was the production designer, like, just greatest crew, and like, they, you know, they made a real effort to make every world distinct. You know, it's like, Caladan has lots of trees, so everything's made out of wood. You know, on Arrakis, you know, they don't have trees, they have sand, so everything's made out of stone. You know, it's like, so you know where you are at any point in the movie, you know, wherever you go. Yeah. And Giedi Prime is just like this, like, horrific, you know, oil slicked nightmare, you know, sort of industrialization world. I think it's just a super cool movie with so many, you know, so many great flights of imagination, and, you know, and I think, it's burrowed its way into my heart, and I think if people read my book, if you already like the movie, you will like it more. And if you don't like the movie, you will hate it less.
I think that is actually true. You will probably hate it less. I also want to say, like, this is a good, your book is a good push to get people to revisit the movie, but also for new generations. I feel like, you know, I don't know how younger folks, like, come into things, like, or what is pushing them to revisit older things too, you know? So this seems like a really good launching pad, and I'm sure some kid out there is going to, like, see your book, be inspired to check out that movie. It's going to change your life in some way. Like, that is, you know, I remember watching things as a teenager and as a kid that creatively hit something in my brain, right? And, like, has led two decisions in my life down the line. So I think this is one of those movies too.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, when I was in middle school, like some of my favorite books were like, you know, The Battle of Brazil about, you know, the Terry Gilliam movie, or like Final Cut about Heaven's Gate, you know? And so it's like, you know, I do have an innate sort of interest in, you know, these movies that, you know, like didn't hit it out of the park, but like, you know, went on to have, you know, influence. Blade Runner, you know, and another, you know, that there's a book called Dangerous Days. It was written by Paul Simon.
Oh, I need to read that too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I talked to Paul. Paul was also on Dune. So I talked to him, Paul Simon, for my, my book, and he had some great behind the scenes stories. But it's like, yeah, like there's something really cool about a movie that didn't quite, you know, land, but you know, and I wish that David had gotten a chance to do a proper cut, you know, his own director's cut of the film. You know, he's still alive, so he still could, you know, fingers crossed. But you know, I think even if you are not even interested in David Lynch's Dune, I think you'll still find, people have told me, like people have read the book who, you know, they saw it like 30 years ago.
Yeah,
they barely remember it.
Yeah.
And they still enjoy the book because, yeah, like as it is a you know, warts and all kind of, you know, examination of what it takes to put together a gargantuan movie like this. It's a, you know, this movie was a massive undertaking, and there's so many crazy stories, you know, that I can't even get into, some of which I couldn't even put in the book because people were like, maybe don't print that.
maybe don't. You got the regret follow-up conversation. Yeah. Okay, well, all right, Max, congrats on getting this book out. I'm hoping the release goes well for you. Where can people find your work online? Where can they find you and reach out?
Well, I have my own website now, www.maxevry.com. I'm also on the social media site formerly known as Prince. It's just @maxevry. And I'm also, if you're less interested in the me of it all and more interested in the Dune of it all, you should definitely check out my Instagram. That's maxevry1. And that is entirely devoted to A Masterpiece in Disarray, David Lynch's Dune and Oral History, and all the fun stuff, you know, all the appearances and all the, you know, articles that come out, you know, like we've been written up in Pitchfork, Wired, the Wrap. You know,
I saw it. Congrats. Yeah.
Yeah. It's been a fun ride. And I think, you know, people just across the board have been telling me how much they've enjoyed the book. You know, a lot of the Dune fans have said like, this is the book they've been waiting for their whole life. So, you know, like it's obviously very, you know, it warms me heart to hear that.
Well, you know what, and if listeners want to hear more from Max, and especially our banter, Max also joined me on the Filmcast review of Evil Dead Rise, where we did not agree at all about anything, but that's also a fun conversation, so go check that out. Max Avery, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Devendra, always a blast.